Hello. You are listening to the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast. We are here to walk with parents on their unwanted journey of child loss, guiding them to a place of hope, light, and purpose, not in spite of their child's death, but as a way to honor his or her life. And now, here is your host, author, speaker, and bereaved parent, Laura Deal.
Hi, thank you for joining me today for episode number 300. Can you believe it? But you are not going to be hearing much from me today. Here in the U.S., this Sunday is our yearly Father's Day, where we celebrate and honor fathers. Now, there is getting to be more awareness for Mother's Day that it is not a happy day of celebration for a lot of women. But it is seldom acknowledged that there are many dads out there who struggle with Father's Day. As those who have lost a child, that struggle can go deep, much deeper than most men are willing to talk about. So I am thankful to have my husband Dave record today's episode with our friend Matt Pullman. Matt and his wife, Sally, are longtime friends that we were so blessed to recently reconnect with. Their oldest son, Andy, and Becca played together when they were little and went to preschool together. I remember having them in the back seat of the car, hearing them tell each other ridiculous knock-knock jokes that made no sense, but they would laugh hysterically with each other over these knock-knock jokes they were making up. Now, before I turn it over to Dave, let me officially introduce Matt to you. Matt Pullman has been a Christ follower since his youth. He was the fifth of six children whose family moved from the Netherlands to the state of Michigan. Matt was born and raised in Michigan and the Chicago area. Matt met his wife Sally when he volunteered at a mission aviation facility in North Carolina. They were married in 1980 and settled in Janesville, Wisconsin. Their three sons were born there before moving to Racine, Wisconsin, where Matt worked for an airline in Milwaukee for 15 years. He pursued an aviation career, maintaining a variety of aircraft for 26 years. Matt went on to teach aviation maintenance at a Christian university in Texas for 16 years, and then moved to Charlotte, North Carolina to be an instructor at a local technical school for the past 5 years. Matt recently retired, but he is still working with the FAA, giving certifications to students for their aviation mechanical engineering. I also want you to know up front that Matt and Sally became a Gold Star family back in 2005 when their son Eric lost his life in the Army while deployed in Iraq. So here is Dave talking with Matt about his journey as a bereaver and how it has impacted his life and his faith for the past 20 years.
Well, hello, Matt.
Hello, Dave.
I'm so glad we had a chance to meet up again a few weeks ago and get reacquainted. It's been so many years, and I loved our time of ministering together way back in the 80s.
That was pretty special, raising our kids together. Yep.
Yep. So I wanted to ask you, being a Gold Star parent, if you'd share a little bit about Eric and Eric's story, and just be as raw and real as you need to be at the beginning, because we definitely have newly bereaved parents on here that are almost scared of even thinking of what it would be like 5 years, 10 years. And now for you, tomorrow will be 20 years.
Yes, it will be.
And as a newly bereaved parent, it's really hard to even imagine being without your child for that long. So anyway, if you could tell us a story about Eric.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Dave. You know, I've known you virtually a lifetime, and we were able to be in a church together. I was able to know your dad. Your dad, Dell, was just like a parent to so many of us at the church. We were the young bucks, and he was a special person to us. So this has high meaning to me. And you living down the block from us, and our kids playing together, and Rebecca and Eric sharing the same space that many years ago was pretty incredible. So I'm thrilled to be able to share the story, because over the 20 years, we've learned that there's high meaning to this. And I think there's value in telling the story. We're certainly proud of our son and the circumstances of his death. I think it makes a real difference how your child passes. And for us, a military boy, and I'll tell his story, but it can make a parent proud to know that he was protecting our country, which he was. So We were in Janesville, Wisconsin. Eric was our middle boy. We had three sons, and they were all split by about 2 to 3 years apart. But Eric was our challenge. Interestingly enough, he just had a different way of thinking. His two brothers were pretty easy to raise, but Eric gave a reality check to us. He had a mind of his own, and authority was not his. He didn't appreciate anybody given any kind of guidance. But for him, he struggled a little bit with his vision. He had a little bit of double vision, which challenged his learning. He didn't like to read, but he was a great doer with his hands, and he loved mechanical stuff. So he was a lot like his dad. I like mechanical stuff. And so we had that camaraderie together. And as he grew, we rebuilt a car together. He painted it. By the time he was 16, we finished it, had white stripes, looked like a race car. And we didn't see much of him after that period of time. And he got himself in a little trouble. He would hang out with the wrong crowd. There was something about the camaraderie he had with those who were a little on the edge. So a little bit into alcohol, a little bit into smoking. And that was a challenge to mom and I as Christian parents. You know, you try to teach them the merits of a certain lifestyle, right? And Eric wanted a different lifestyle.
I heard
And
something just this past weekend that I thought was really profound. And it was that God does not call us to the outcome, He calls us to faithfulness.
that couldn't be truer. You know, and you know, when you have multiple children, you see the personality differences. You raise them in a similar fashion, but the product is different. And we had so much fun with our boys. We just did. And Eric was a lot of fun. And that's how he made good friend, or he made friends, not always the best friends, but people that he could share experiences with. And it was evident that college was not going to be his high on his list. And he began to look into what he could do that he enjoyed. Well, he loved big equipment. So he went to a training ground where they taught you, they were going to get you your CDL license. So he learned how to drive trucks, learned how to drive bulldozers. He was all into that. Well, by the time he was 18, he wanted to use that for a job, but the companies wouldn't give him any kind of insurance. They said, you got to be 21 before you can do that. That's a big gap of time before you can start to earn some money. And somehow he ended up at a recruiter's office. We didn't bring him there, but somehow he made it there. And the Army offered him, they'd pay his debt for learning how to drive those vehicles. And they promised him he'd drive Abrams tanks. He'd be able to drive Humvees. And they got his attention. And the oddity of it is, authority was not something Eric liked to hang around with. And I still,
If I got a place for you.
well, when his mom took him to the boot camp in Colorado, she drove him from Wisconsin. And I still remember him calling back from the boot camp. I think it was 6 or 8 weeks or so. And they put him through his paces. And one night we're talking on the phone with him, and he says, you know, mom and dad, sometimes it's just easier to do what the sergeant says. And we just kind of looked at each other, said, well, when did he figure that out? Because he sure didn't figure it out at our house. But he lost about 40 pounds when he was in boot camp. He was kind of finding his way. He came back, he was strong as an ox. He picked me up over his head, and I'm like, wow, this young boy has become a man. This all came about. He was really driven by the 9/11 thing, the Twin Towers. Let's see, he would have been about 16 years old or so at that point, and it affected his life. They watched the news, they see all those things happening, and it was pretty prevalent among the young folks joining the Army. Do something to defend our country. So that's what he did. His first tour of duty was at the end of 2003. He was there for till mid 2004.
And this was in Iraq, right?
This was in Baghdad, Iraq. He ended up right at the front lines. They were driving the tanks into hostile areas. They had a deck of cards, and on there they called it high value targets. And these were the guys that they were going after. So he was going house to house, sometimes just by foot. And then he was also defending with the tanks. And when he came back home, he was fine. He was doing okay. You could tell it was taking a toll, certainly on their mental capacities. He struggled with what he had seen. And it's a strange war when they can call home on a cell phone and talk to mom and dad about what transpired that day. They're on the other side of the world. They're seeing tragedy and they try to relay it. And you begin to have an appreciation for what our military deals with. It certainly changed my perspective. And when he came home, he had been dating a gal for about 3 years. Her name was Renata. And they had kind of, with about 2 week notice, when he was home, he just said, "You know what? We're going to get married." And so, in about a 2 week time frame, the moms got together, Renata's moms and Sally, and they put together the wedding. And that was at our church. But then a few months later, he was back to his second tour of duty. And this is where it really hit home for me, that knowing what the tragedy is across the ocean, a new wife that you have, and you still go back and step into that environment. I have high respect for our military, going back when you know how tragic it is. So during his second tour, which was toward the end of 04 and then into 05, he would send emails occasionally, pretty rare. Again, he was not, books to him were a challenge. Writing was a challenge, but he did it. And his brother Andy, his older brother Andy, had been communicating with him and just saying, "Eric, you're in life and death circumstances. Have you considered your relationship to God?" Of course, he had gone to church all his life. He had been exposed to it. And the military finally pushed him enough to the wall that this actually, he made a decision to follow Christ. And we were able to see it via email. Well, come June 4th, we get a phone call and it's Eric online. And he's talking to mom and I. And he tells us what's going on. He tells us he's been really reading the little Bible that grandma had sent to him. And he says, "I probably read that thing 100 times," he said. Well, it was only a 2-inch by 2-inch Bible with about 30 pages in it, but it hit him right where what he needed to hear. He told us, he said, "If two soldiers come to your door, just know that I'll be in heaven." He said, "I'm good with God." You talk about a gift, a gift to the parents. We had no idea. And the next day we get a phone call, not from the military. We get a phone call from Renata's mother. She heard the news from Renata, but she didn't know that we didn't know. We were in Texas. She was in Wisconsin. And she's asking how we're doing. And we're telling her we're doing fine. We're good. We didn't know what was going on. And then she had to tell us. And Dave, it just, those feelings well back up, right? You never forget that moment. Your mind races. You don't know what to do next. Fortunately, Greg, our youngest son, was home. He was 2 to 3 years younger than Eric. And we just kind of held each other. And at our home in Texas, we just prayed. And it was about 45 minutes before we started to really collect ourselves. And to me, this is miraculous. It was as if we were looking from the top of our house down at the events that were taking place. And I just felt a compulsion to react and to begin to take action. And Sally was beginning to feel the same comfort that we were functional. Let's do something here. We were starting to get phone calls already from Associated Press, Fox News, CBS. And I'm thinking to myself, why are these big media outlets calling us? Well, it turns out that our son Eric was the 38th soldier who had died in Operation Iraqi Freedom, and that he was the one they just kind of targeted because we had decided, okay, we took the phone calls. There was a story to be told, and I finally pulled aside and I told Sally, I says, I'm just going to write an email. I'm going to put pictures attached to it, and I'm going to send it to the outlets because they were all asking for information." So we did it blunderbuss fashion. Well, when it went out, the Milwaukee Journal, I think it is, Sentinel Journal, they had it on the front page for 4 days, the story about Eric. And Renata was struggling, no question about it. She had her family, her parents were helping care for her. And God just got this story out there. And we began to realize people wanted to talk about this. And when it came time for bringing Eric home, that was a difficult time. And I still remember at the funeral home, we didn't want to see Eric. We wanted to remember him as he was. The issue had been there were three soldiers, him and two others. They were on a rescue mission. At the time, it was prevalent for IEDs, improvised explosive devices, to be used. And the Iraqis would implant a bomb in the road. They'd disable a vehicle, a Humvee or whatever it was. And then other soldiers would come to rescue them. Then they would set off a second incendiary device. And that's what got Eric and his two buddies. So the three were lost in that event. So we're at the funeral home and we're contemplating this issue. And Renata's crying, and we're just asking God for grace, for mercy. To us, it was, he's in heaven. And God was beginning to just plant that reality in our minds. All the events that transpired throughout there, I'll just commend some people here. Our church was fantastic. The people just rallied around us. The military was fantastic. We were getting visits from generals. We were getting invites to events. The whole process of the funeral issues were just very delicately taken by the military. And so that whole thing to us was a very helpful thing. What people said, what people did sticks out in our minds.
And not having to go through all the planning necessarily yourself, but the military helping you through it.
Absolutely. And a lot of that transpired where he was at in the 3rd Cavalry in Colorado, Fort Carson. And so those are the people that really touched base with us.
I know that every loss of a parent's child has its own unique layers of grief that need to be peeled through. And for those that, in our case, Becca had long-term illness, although we were kind of shocked the day she died, we weren't expecting it. So there still was a shock value. But others, they're not expecting, they're not in bad health or anything like that. They're not even in the military. And something happens, it's just a completely different experience. And at least in the military sense, you know, in the back of your mind, there's that gnawing reality that it could possibly happen. But it is interesting, the media effects. And this was a good thing. But at the same time, you're talking within 45 minutes to an hour of you knowing you're getting bombarded by the press. You know, because they're looking at a story. They obviously human interest. When people are in grief, that's an intriguing thing for them, and they distance themselves from the emotions you're going through and think, oh, this could be good media. So, but it is interesting that God gave you a grace for that at that time that you needed. What would you say when you receive that news? You guys were together, but you personally. What was going through your mind? Were you concerned about Sally, your wife, more than even necessarily the loss of your son? I know for me, that was one of the things I found myself with when I was at the hospital and found the news that she had passed. My thoughts immediately went to the pain of my family, and I didn't even think of my own loss.
You are absolutely right, Dave. Sally had homeschooled these three boys. For her to lose one, as a father, as a husband, I was highly concerned. I didn't know how she was going to manage it, although I knew she had already, our relationship was strong. We had been married 25 years when this occurred. So we had been through some things. And we knew what she had seen in her mother. Sally had a brother, an older brother, and a younger sister. And she came from a missionary family. She had spent 10 years growing up in Papua New Guinea. And when her and her siblings came back and started going to college here in the United States, her older brother, Ross, was killed by a drunk driver. This transpired in the process of the parents moving back from Papua New Guinea to the United States. Imagine that.
How old was
You're
Sally
living a life
then?
as, what's that?
How old was Sally at that point?
Well, she was in college. She was at John Brown University in Arkansas. And imagine that as a parent. You've been living as a missionary. You've given your life dedicated to that work. And you lose your 21-year-old son by a drunk driver. There was his girlfriend in the car with him. She was hurt but not killed. Still to this day, we know this gal, and she actually lives in the area that we're in. But now the mom comes under the strain of dealing with this. And Sally was telling me, we were talking about this the other day. She said, what my mom did was incredible. She said she thought about the other two kids. She was determined to make sure they were okay, determined to make sure her husband was okay. And she just took the bull by the horns and did what was, she prayed through on these issues. She was faithful to continue all the practical issues of life, which often can just drop by the wayside. You're in such grief, you can't function. And God gave her the ability to function. And she was telling me, she says, man, I looked at what my mom did. And when this happened, my wife is very practical. When there's the potential for things to go wrong, she thinks the worst case, preps herself emotionally. And then if and when it happens, she's kind of ready. And the same thing transpired here. From the time you talked about the fact we knew the hazard existed, right? He's in the military, he's fighting these battles. We understood from the phone calls, his life was at risk every day. And but when it happened, I watched how God just moved on her. And we have a whole new appreciation for the grace of God and how that impacts in a practical way our lives. And these kind of things deepen your walk, Dave. And like we were talking before, we would go to these military events because we were invited. We were given a night at a hotel. We were given a wonderful dinner. We were given opportunities to meet generals, to speak with fellow soldiers, and to understand Eric's circumstances with where he was at. We were blessed by that. These were not necessarily Christian folks, but they were awesome folks. Our military is awesome. And the connections we started to make with people, we wanted to be able to have real conversations. And so we went to two or three of these. And by the time we got to the third one, Sally and I looked at each other and we said, you know what? We've seen several of the same people and they're in the same lost state. They're not functioning out of this depression. But look what God has done to heal our hearts. And we said, either we got to have a ministry toward these people and help them understand the grace of God and the goodness of who God is and what his son Jesus Christ did for us. Either we were going to pursue that ministry, or we just had to pull back from going to these events. And I know you've experienced some of the same thing in the circumstances you were talking about. If you watch God heal your heart and begin to move, for some it takes a long, long time. And again, to me, how your son or daughter passes is a huge deal. Our son was doing something that we were proud of. We were pleased that he wanted to help people and help our country. And yet, I have a close friend who I went to college with who also lost his son about a similar time frame and similar age. And the issue was he's a Christian man, raised his kids in a Christian family, for some reason got compelled by a group of kids to go to a party. He'd never drink, he'd never had alcohol, but they convinced him to have enough alcohol that that night he lost his life. And I talked with my friend about that. It has just rocked his world. The Lord has helped him through it. But to me, I think the pain of that was a much greater issue because there's such disarray associated with the death.
Yeah.
That's a struggle.
Well, there's so, like I said before, every circumstance is so different, every relationship's so different. And I do think you find yourself making a choice. Early, I remember one of my early thoughts was this pain I'm feeling was, God, don't let this be wasted. Don't let this pain be wasted. Use it somehow. And I think, first of all, experts say, and we've mentioned this several times on podcasts, that for bereaved parents, they consider it early, fresh grief 5 years and earlier.
Wow.
So if you're out there and it's only been a couple years or a few months or 3 years, even up to five, you're still an early griever. You need to have some patience and grace for yourself. But I do think our relationship with God is very similar to our relationship with our spouse in the sense that we've heard, and I was going to ask you this about your relationship with Sally at the time. Did it bring you together? I think you said it did. Or did it start to cause issues in your marriage? Because you hear all sorts of metrics out there, and some of them I think are really erroneous, that when you lose a child, chances are you're going to end up divorced. In reality, I don't think those statistics bear out because you can get statistics in other areas too. I think what it comes down to is death of a child will magnify any problems you have in your marriage already. If you were strong together beforehand, chances are this is going to bring you together. If you had issues beforehand, chances are it's going to try to take you apart.
I think your perspective is spot on. When I think about it, we had just moved from Wisconsin to Texas the year before. So we were in a new environment. And when this transpired, we had had to make decisions about this big life change. Married 25 years, lived all of it in Wisconsin. And now we're moving to Texas. So we had had to pray about those things. We had had to talk with each other, get the real feelings out. We had gone through some marital things that we had to work through our marriage issues. All of that had taken place. So when this event happened, we had something to draw from that really we just kind of went to each other naturally. We didn't want to be separated from each other. It
That's
bonded
good.
us in a way that we've been married 45 years now.
One thing I was going to ask you, especially early on, when you were dealing with your grief, did you kind of hide it from Sally to try to protect her from, I mean, she has her own grief to deal with. You don't want her to see yours, or were you open with her and she saw you go through it just as much? Because as men, we deal with this stuff so differently than our wives do. So I was just curious if she saw that, or if you kind of like one of the things that Laura and I say often, and this is typical, it's not all the time, but usually a woman will bury herself in their children's things, the pictures, the memories. She needs to deal with it emotionally. And as men, typically, not all the time, but typically, we have to deal with it by compartmentalizing things. Trying to get into the emotional side of it is a distraction for us. We deal with it more on the mental level, I guess is the way to put it. So I'm just wondering where you were at in all that.
And I'm gonna have a little outlier type of response to that because I talked with Sally about that, and I know my wife pretty well. She knows how to cope. She can become very mature and very solid in dealing with difficult circumstances. And it really came to light in this event where she just became a bulwark for the kids, a bastion of comfort. And she's the one that will try to hide some of her emotional status. I'll be the one that ends up. I'll wake up in the night and I'm just like, oh my goodness, I can't. And she'll naturally get up and bring comfort to that. And it's very interesting that she was almost the better coper. And this period for us didn't last really long. We had months of waking up in the night, but the bad dreams, the tragic thoughts, thinking about the loss and trying to cope. But we had so many people feeding into us and so much ability to talk with each other about it. And the employment that I had was at a Christian university, and they were remarkable. And all of these things were in our corner, which made our healing much faster. I feel for people that are not connected to a community activities where you have friendships. It's powerful when you have those friendships. And I have a new appreciation for the church. You know, so often we were helping people in church. We would go, you know, we're in Royal Rangers, or we're in the nursery element, or helping with this or that. And we had helps ministries that we were part of. And sometimes you think, wow, church is a lot of work. You know, I put in so much. And then a tragedy strikes, and then a need arises, and you're like feeling helpless. And all of a sudden you realize all these people I've been investing in, they start investing back in me. And I have a new appreciation and a new respect for what God has created in the church and for what God has created in the family element. And when people are devoid of both of those things, they don't have a church family, they don't have a solid family relationships with brothers, sisters, moms, dads. That's difficult. And the enemy of our souls tries to weed us out by pushing away us from those entities. And if I had a prayer for what I would like to see today, it's that people just reinvest them in their relationships with other Christians. Reinvest in your family, reinvest in your church.
And that's the key, the relationship with others. I know our experience in that, and that is one of our calls, is not just to be here for any grieving parent, but specifically for Christians that are really struggling with their faith. You know, so many of them struggle with even going back to church, and not all of them have the same experience you had. You know, there can be churches out there that, you know, they're almost all of them are really good the first few weeks, helping out, you know, and all. But further you get down the road, sometimes they start to kind of fade out. Maybe a year or so down the road, they start, you haven't gotten the victory over that yet, you know, because they don't understand the depth of the grief. And for those, though, I think your words are encouraging, that you keep pressing into God, you know, and let him do something in you through this and deepen your experience with him. I know for me, my understanding of the love I had for Becca when I lost her, my understanding of God the Father's love for me just multiplied, and how he must have felt giving his own son for us. He understands the heartbreak that we go through, you know, and that his love for us is just so deep, and it's something that through this process that we really have the honor of experiencing something that no other people can. And that is, especially as a church, we're really good at taking the scripture that says you'll know him in his resurrection power. And man, we're all into that. That's great. You know, man, give me that resurrection power. And then skip the second part of that that says, and to know him in his sufferings. And this is some of the greatest sufferings we can ever feel. I mean, there's a lot of suffering out there, but there's nothing.
But your point is right on. We don't fully understand God. And I think of what I thought about as this process transpired. And I've thought about God in different ways that has just pulled me closer. I would have thought I'd be pushing away, but I didn't. I think exactly what you're saying, the realization of what God sacrificed to bring salvation to us, to allow that loss of his son to happen, is such a remarkable reality that once we fully feel it, we're so appreciative. Thank you, God, for taking that step, for making that happen for us. He could have just left us in our sin, but he didn't do that. And it does compel and drive us. It has driven you to a ministry that I think I have such high respect for, Dave. And when we lost Eric, I still remember at the church service, we and that DVD you watched, we talked a little bit about how it's impacting people. And at the time of the funeral, there were 36 people that either recommitted their heart to Christ or gave their heart to Christ for the first time. And that's really been our goal in this process. Lord, what can you do with that experience? Like you say, you don't want to see it wasted. This is an opportunity where we can actually share with people, we can relate with people that have had these issues and struggles. And the joy of it is just a gift from God that goes along with what we think as helping people. Well, we're being helped too, right? In those discussions. It's a blessing.
Well, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you is, have you been able to honor Eric's death and his life? More importantly, and found ways to continue his legacy. And obviously, that's one way. You haven't turned this into some huge ministry or whatever, but you're ready to talk to anybody and everyone about his life and his decision for Christ right before this tragedy happened. And that's been neat to see.
This has been a door, being able to share about Eric. I work at a school where we teach students how to work on airplanes. And once they have their certificates, they go to the airline, they're working on airliners. And we've had an incredible growth in the number of students at the current school I'm at. But I also test them on behalf of the FAA at the end of the process and give them certificates. Well, once they've accomplished that, there's no more connection between the school and them, and I get the opportunity to share with them about life. And I often bring up Eric and his passing at 21 years old, and we get to talk about that issue of at the cusp of life where you've finished your training, you're ready to launch out, and now somebody's actually paying you instead of you paying someone else, right? And you feel like you got the world by the tail, but consider your eternal future. And we're able to have that conversation. And it's amazing how I can see them begin to, the wheels are turning. They've heard pieces of this. They may not know anybody that really has talked with them one-on-one about the relationship with Jesus Christ. And God is opening this door. It's exceeded 140 conversations that I've had with people, and to me, that's a ministry that I want to stay part of for a while. And
Yeah, and that's what an incredible legacy of Eric's, too.
yes.
So we're coming up on Father's Day. I know for me, out of all the holidays out there, and birthdays and anniversaries of, okay, this you're coming up on an anniversary of 20 years ago was his passing. For me personally, Father's Day was always the hardest. And now we're 14, it'll be 14 years for us in October. And the sting isn't like it was, but it's still, and I've got other, just like you, I've got other kids. And over the years, I end up doing more with them. But I early on, especially that first one, it was so hard for me because Becca was 2 when we got married. And I adopted her 6 months after that. But I had known her since she was a baby. So we just had that deep connection anyway. And so when we got married, my first Father's Day was actually with her. It wasn't her as a baby. It wasn't her in her mom's womb. It was her 2 years old coming in to give me powdered donuts in bed, and we
Yeah.
sat there in bed eating powdered donuts together. And now my first Father's Day without her after her passing
Yes.
was just a very significant thing to me. And I
Wow.
know for me, I ended up taking my saxophones out to her gravesite. And Becca was a worshiper. She's a very strong-willed worshiper. But she had written some beautiful worship songs. So I would be out there just playing her songs and worshiping with her. And obviously knowing that now she's joining me right at the feet of
Yes.
Christ.
Yes.
That was just very special, but it was still a very
Yes.
difficult time. And I would say this year's probably not going to be nearly as difficult as that. And it kind
Yeah.
of
Yeah.
tapers off a little bit, but
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's not a day that you wish to avoid. But I know some mothers and fathers, when it comes to Mother's Days and Father's Day, they just soon forget it.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. June 5th every year is the anniversary of his passing. So we normally we've got some flags we put out. We put them out from Memorial Day on, and we have a metal cutout of the soldier kneeling in front of his rifle. So you have these mementos that are shared by your family and shared by neighbors. And so that's been the pervasive thought leading up to Father's Day. And then when we reach Father's Day, our sons have been pretty special to us. You know, they're dealing with the loss of that brother, which they've coped so well with, right? In terms of adjusting their lives to it. But we share it as a family. They honor me on Father's Day. It has not been for us something that we certainly don't avoid it. We share it, and we experience the joy of God's healing to us. And that's kind of been the sense of it for us on Father's Day. And you know, we've up until our parents passed, you know, we were able to just continually enjoy that with our parents.
Right. And I think that's a good thing when it comes to Father's Day too, is using that as another way to honor Eric's life, you know.
Yes. Yeah, it links together. He had been married. There were no children from his marriage. His wife Renata remarried. She's got three kids, and she has graciously kept a relationship with us, and has a wonderful husband. So Father's Day for them, we've not shared it together, but just an appreciation of those men in our lives.
Well, I was going to ask you if you had any special words that you'd like to end with for the fathers out there. I know obviously there's the spiritual side in our walk with the Lord, but even just in dealing with the reality of the grief and the tragedy that this world hands to us at times.
Yes. Well, here's the thing that I would want to reflect on. You know, as fathers, there's plenty of opportunity to pull away from things that are challenging us. And we can pull back, often to the detriment of those around us. And I think about when Eric had to go back on his second tour of duty, and I kind of make this correlation. I think about what I would want to tell Eric now, and it would be, "Thank you, son. Thank you for what you did as a man to meet your commitments, to go back on that second tour. We love you. We appreciate you more than anything." And I think about parents in their involvement with their families, both moms and dads, when they stay committed in their family element despite very difficult circumstances, and many of them have such difficult circumstances, but yet they hang in there, they remain. They're available. They stay responsible. They continue to function in the family. I would say, bless you. Lord, bless you. I would encourage you to continue that path because it will be worth it. And the rewards are many. Your family, when they, on a Father's Day, when you have invested in your family, they invest back in you. And it's a wonderful element to have. We talked about church. The church entity, we talked about having families. All of that is only possible if we hang in through the tough times. And then we begin to see God do his miraculous work. So stay in the game is what my word would be to the fathers out there.
That's good. That's good. Well, thank you, Matt. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this with us and celebrating Father's Day with the other fathers out there that have lost their children.
I hope you were as blessed as I was listening to Matt share his journey with us with so much hope and encouragement. And thank you, Dave, for having this chat and for what you shared with us as well. Did you hear the news that GPS Hope has our next retreat planned? It's in October in New York State. This retreat will be extra special because our precious friends, Dr. Doug and BJ Jensen, will be joining us. Doug and BJ have a unique ministry of putting American Sign Language to songs in a beautiful and moving way that ministers deeply to the shattered souls, to those of us who have lost a child. Now, they have experienced the loss themselves, and their love for fellow bereavers is felt deeply through their songs, their speaking, and just one-on-one conversations. You can find out more about the retreat by going to gpshope.org/retreats, and I will put a link to that in the show notes. Now, if October in New York doesn't work for you, you might want to consider Florida in February. That sounds good, right? We will be part of the Renew and Remember two-day retreat. As Dave and I will be part of the Renew and Remember two-day retreat. Now, this will be happening right before a four-night cruise with a special grief seminar on the day out to sea. Dave and I have been part of the grief cruise. This will be our fourth year, and they are wonderful. Now, you can come to the retreat, you can come to the grief cruise, or you can come to both. Go to gpshope.org/cruise if you want to know more about either of these. And I will put a link to this in the show notes as well. Before going on to the birthday segment, I want to say thank you to Ho Tech Min from Singapore for sponsoring today's podcast episode along with the other June episodes in memory of his daughter Emma, who left this earth at the young age of 10 years old. Emma loved to sing and used to make up songs about being a bean sprout, giving her the nickname of Emma Bean Sprout. Thank you, Tech Min, for showing your gratefulness for the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast by sponsoring the month of June's episodes to make sure others have the opportunity to hear the same message of hope that you have received through this podcast. Let's go on with today's birthday segment. Tyler Harkness was born on June 8th and left us at age 26. Allie Custer was born on June 12th and left us at age 29. We celebrate the day these children came into the world and into the lives of their families. We know it will always be a special and important day. If you would like to have your child's birthday announced to the other listeners the week of his or her birthday, I would love to be able to do that for you. Just go to gpshope.org/birthdays, fill out and submit that form that gives us the information we need, and I will share your child's birthday with the listeners the week of his or her birthday. Dave will also send you an email to remind you to listen that week. There will be a link to that in the show notes as well. To wrap up today's episode, we are going to play the end of Dave and Matt's talk, where Dave asks Matt to say a special prayer for the dads listening.
I was wondering if you could lead us out with praying for those fathers out there.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been a privilege, Dave. Appreciate you and Laura. Let's go ahead and pray. Dear Lord, thank you for creating our families. Thank you for the role we can play in living life within our own family. The strength, the provision, the security, and the fulfillment we can have within a family is something we want to appreciate and thank you for. I pray for each man that's listening today that a special touch of grace from God himself would become evident, that his incredible ability to meet needs would be on display for all to experience. You are worthy of our praise, Lord. You have proven yourself time and time again. May all doubt and despair be driven out, and may our faith rise as we commit our way to you. We thank you for all that's ahead and that we know all of these things that you will do. And in Jesus' name, Amen.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, Matt. And
All
to all our
right.
listeners out there, have a good Father's Day.
Yes,
And I pray
absolutely.
that you get closer to our Heavenly Father
Yeah.
through all this. Don't let it,
right.
don't let this pain be wasted.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
And on behalf of Matt, Laura, and myself, as Laura always ends each episode, hold on, pain eases, there is hope.